My name is Marina Antropo-Kramer. I was born in post-war Germany into a family of Russian refugees. Here's a synopsis of my novel, Rhodes. When Nazi forces occupy the beautiful coastal city of Yalta, Crimea, everything changes. 18-year-old Philippe has few options. He is a prime candidate for forced labor in Germany. His hurried marriage to his childhood friend Galina might grant him reprieve, but the rules keep shifting. Galina's parents, branded as traitors for innocently doing business with the enemy, decide to volunteer in hopes of better placement. The work turns out to be horrific, but at least the family stays together. By winter 1945, Allied air raids destroy strategic sites. Dresden, a city of no military consequence, seems safe. The world knows Dresden's fate. Rhodes is the story of one family lucky enough to escape with their lives as the city burns behind them. But as the war ends, they are separated and their trials continue. Looking for safety in an alien land, they move toward one another with the help of refugee networks and pure chance. Along the way, they find new ways to live in a changed world, new meanings for fidelity, grief, and love. And this is the prologue. This is takes place in Germany, 1945. In the end, getting away was easy. They set off across the field through ankle-high summer brown grass, heading for the road, Philippe's shovel swinging by his side. Ilya set the pace, purposeful, but not too fast. They walked abreast, heads down. "Keep walking," Ilya said softly, glancing sideways at his son-in-law. "Don't look back. He'll think we're going to work on the road." "With a rucksack and all our belongings?" Philippe thought, but merely grunted in reply, refusing to look at the older man, expecting at any moment a shout, a bullet in the back. The old man had to be crazy, thinking two Russian men in German uniform, ROA insignia on their sleeves, could expect to survive in this alien land, even if the war was over. Wasn't the American camp they had just left behind their best hope? When they reached the shade of the linden trees that lined the road, the men stopped and turned. Across the field they had just crossed, the camp looked small, a forlorn grouping of gray barracks, a dusty yard, a neglected watchtower. A wisp of smoke rising from the kitchen chimney, where even now the next meal they would not eat was being prepared. And there was Annalise, carrying a basket of laundry to the officers' quarters, throwing her brash lap over her shoulder at a passing remark. His eye caught the glint of sunlight on her cropped auburn hair, hair he knew to be fine and smooth and smelling of almonds. Philippe suffered a momentary twinge of regret, a little ache at the back of the throat. Did Annalise care that he had not said goodbye? A few men milled around the yard with no apparent purpose. Some stood in small groups or squatted in a circle where Philippe knew there would be dice or a card game in progress. The lone sentry stood with his back against the fence post, one leg bent back at the knee, the sole of his booted foot resting against the fence. He lit a cigarette, tossed the match into the scrubby grass. "That's what I want," thought Philippe, "an American cigarette." And this scene is Xenia, the mother whose son has been severely wounded at the front and is dying. Some days she sat at his bedside while he slept, interlacing the fingers of her large, restless hands, studying the ethereal beauty of his gaunt features, taking some small comfort in the regularity of his breathing. Once when he awoke, she pleaded, "Tell me, I have lived through revolution, witnessed the execution of my father. When you were small, we suffered through the years of civil war and the horrors of famine. I know these things in my own mind and body. I will not forget them. But we survived all that. We are alive. We must have hope." She paused, placing her hand over his brittle fingers. "Share your sorrow with me. Your silence is breaking my heart." "Tell you?" Maxim took his hand away, raising himself on his elbow. "Mama, what should I tell you? Should I describe the mayhem of life at the front, the chaos of conflicting orders or breakdown of communication, the paralyzing fear of making fatal mistakes? Or would you like to hear about the swift, questionable justice of field executions to stop the wave of desertion, neither the runners nor the shooters knowing what is right or wrong?" He took a sip of water from the glass Xenia held out for him and fell back heavily on his pillow. How can I tell you what it is like to be a medic with no supplies, no blankets, no safe or sanitary place or to even try to save a life? I cannot make you hear the voices in my head, grown men crying for their mothers, boys who should be dancing with their sweethearts, caught in the agony of slow, relentless death. Xenia closed her eyes but could not stop the tears. We can pray, she said. God will what? Erase the memory of mud, excrement and blood, a stench for which there is no word? It permeates your clothing, your hair, clings to your skin. You eat it with your daily kasha and moldy bread, drink it with your foul water, breathe it in what passes for sleep. Is this the God we should pray to, the one who watches and allows such beastliness? Maxime turned his face to the wall. Xenia wept. For the wasted lives, the needless, stupid sacrifice, the crazed suffering from which there was no return to ordinary humanity. For the damaged, the broken, the shattered, the vanished. For the son she was losing, the son she had already, she knew, lost. And this is a scene when the family is prepared to leave their home, and they know that they will never be able to return. They're just traveling with what they can carry. Galina stopped on the threshold for a last glance around the rooms at the remaining furniture and rugs. What will happen to our things? Her father laid a reassuring hand on her shoulder. Someone will use them or sell them. Don't trouble yourself over a few objects. We've had the use of them. Now someone else can benefit. Is that suitcase heavy for you? No, Papa, it's not heavy. That wasn't what I meant, Galina wanted to say. She had no special attachment to these particular things, many of them already old before becoming part of her childhood home. Hers was a more specific curiosity. She wanted to know the people, to touch the coats they would hang on the hooks near the door, see them sleeping in the beds, feel the vibration of their footsteps across the front room carpet, hear their talk and laughter around the kitchen table, smell the food they cooked on the old iron stove. She felt unmoored, suspended between the yawning void that was their future and the unpeopled vacuum they were leaving behind. Maybe we all feel this way, she thought. We just don't know how to talk about it. And this is a scene as the war has ended and the men and the women have been separated from each other and are looking to reunite in some way. This is a scene that takes place with the women who need to cross the Danube in order to get from the British sector into the American sector. They set off, walking in small groups to avoid looking like a mob. Some, especially those with small children, decided to stay and wait for better weather. Inevitably, more women left the ranks as the marching became difficult, choosing to take their chances with whatever nation was to determine their fates, rather than stake their future on an uncertain venture that had begun to seem risky and perhaps unnecessarily desperate. But a small column, with Xenia in the lead, persevered. They marched, driven by her tireless energy, plodding step by painful step across along the washed-out road, their feet sinking into ankle-deep mud that sucked at their shoes and clung to their legs like a clammy second skin. And still it rained. High above, in a sinister sky, a full moon shone dimly through breaks in sooty clouds, then disappeared, drawing a celestial curtain on the scene below, as if ashamed of its part in the human misery. They reached the second bridge well after midnight. Unlike the stone bridge, which rose majestically high above the water, this one was narrow. The wooden bed spanning the Danube where the river ran straight for several kilometers with no visible obstacle to its fluid progress. The women stopped, their heavy breathing after the exertion of the last 5 hours walking, drowned out by the noise of the rushing river. They looked at the bridge, its span curving slightly upward toward the center before falling away into the murky distance of the far shore. Numbingly cold waves lapped at their feet in an ominous parody of playfulness. Galina stepped onto the walkway. She felt the wood shift under her tread. A sudden gust of wind pushed at her skirt, forcing her to grasp the handrail for balance. Mama, tell me again why we need to get to the other side tonight. For our protection, for our children, how do you think Katyusha will do in a Siberian labor camp or a Soviet orphanage? We must reach the American sector because they believe in liberty. Svoboda, she pronounced the word softly, then repeated it with greater emphasis. Svoboda. Tonight, because tomorrow when the sky clears, it may be too late. The rain-swollen river ran dark, only a hand's breadth beneath the slippery planks, its notorious swirls and eddies outlined with black iridescent foam, the bubbles bursting only to form new clusters downstream. The bridge swayed perceptibly, the wooden slats and handrails creaking against slender steel girders, reminding them that somewhere in the gloom, beyond the visible distance, there was bomb damage whose extent they would not know until they reached it. They set off, walking close together, keeping to the sides near the handrails, bowing their heads into the wind, which intensified as they moved into the open, away from the shelter of the keening trees. It was slow going. The incline toward the center of the structure made steeper by the rain, the planks slick as newly formed ice, the wind's howling reaching satanic proportions in its intensity. At the crest, they stopped to rest, waiting for the women at the end of the queue to catch up. "Mother of God," someone exclaimed, while the rest surveyed the scene before them in stupefied silence. The bridge fell away toward the shore, the downhill incline mirroring the climb they had just completed. It fell away, then disappeared on the black roiling water, coming up again at the far end onto the riverbank. That's it.